Gopitaya Jagat Shreshte Kale Sve Sve Chutatmakaha Mano Vag Vritibhi Somyar Gunai Samranjayan Prajaha Gopitaya Jagat Shreshte Gopitaya Jagat Shreshte Kale Sve Sve Chitatmakaha Kale Sve Sve Chitatmakaha Mano Vag Vritti Bi Samyair Mano Vag Vritti Bi Samyair Gunai Samranjayan Prajaha Gunai Samranjayan Prajaha Gopitaya Jagat Shreshte Kale Sve Sve Chutatmakaha Mano Vag Vritti Bi Samyair Gunai Samranjayan Prajaha Gopitaya Jagat Shreshte Kale Sve Sve Chutatmakaha Mano Vag Vritti Bi Samyair Gunai Samranjayan Prajaha Matajis. Gopitaya, for the protection of Jagat Shreshte, of the Supreme Creator, Kale, in due course of time, Sway Sway, own Achyuta Atmakaha. Being Krishna conscious, Manaha, mind, Vak, words, Vritibi, by occupation, Somyai, very gentle, Gunai, by qualification, Samranjayan, pleasing. Prajaha, the citizens. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Since Maharaj Prithu was a perfect devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he wanted to protect the Lord's creation by pleasing the various citizens according to their various desires. Therefore, Prithu Maharaj used to please them in all respects by his words, mentality, works, and gentle behavior. Purport. As will be explained in the next verse, Prithu Maharaj used to please all kinds of citizens by his extraordinary capacity to understand the mentality of others. Indeed, his dealings were so perfect that every one of the citizens was very much satisfied and lived in complete peace. The word achutmat atmakaha is significant in this verse, for Prithu Maharaj used to rule this planet as the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He knew that he was the representative of the Lord, and that the Lord's creation must be protected intelligently. Atheists cannot understand the purpose behind the creation. Although this material world is condemned when it is compared to the spiritual world, there is still some purpose behind it. Modern scientists and philosophers cannot understand that purpose, nor do they believe in the existence of a creator. They try to establish everything by their so-called scientific research. But they do not center anything around the Supreme Creator. A devotee, however, can understand the purpose of creation, which is to give facilities to the individual living entities who want to lord it over material nature. The ruler of this planet should, therefore, know that all the inhabitants, especially human beings, have come to this material world for sense enjoyment. It is therefore the duty of the ruler to satisfy them in their sense enjoyment, as well as to elevate them to Krishna consciousness so that they can all ultimately return home back to Godhead. With this idea in mind, the king or government head should rule the world. In this way, everyone will be satisfied. How can this be accomplished? There are many examples, like Prithu Maharaj, and the history of his regency on this planet is elaborately described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Even in this fallen age, if the rulers, governors, and presidents take advantage of Prithu Maharaj's example, there will certainly be a reign of peace and prosperity throughout the world. Om Ajnana Tamarandasya Kyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitana Manovishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shita Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitang Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitang Cha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Deve Pranamami Hori Priye Pancha Kalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gauravata Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Pitaya Jagat Shrishte Kale Sve Sve Chitat Makaha Mano Vag Vritti Bi Somyar Gunai Samranjayan Prajaha. Since Maharaj Prithu was a perfect devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he wanted to protect the Lord's creation by pleasing the various citizens according to their various desires. Therefore, Prithu Maharaj used to please them in all respects by his words, mentality, works, and gentle behavior. I've written these notes and I will look at them. But speaking the words that I just spoke, the words of Bhagavatam, describing Prithu Maharaj, how pleasing he was in every aspect of his person to all of those with whom he had encounter, immediately Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, Srila Krishnapada, came to my mind. He came to my mind because seeing him has always been, even seeing him in my mind at any time that I remember him, is a great pleasure, because in every way he's so gentle, he's so full of love, he's so compassionate, he's so courageous. He's so exemplary in every way. He just makes you think you're looking at Krishna's pure devotee. And through his pure devotee, you can see that Krishna is real, and the spiritual world is real. And your hope, my hope, our hope, to be transferred from this hellish condition to a supremely jubilant and ever-increasingly wonderful condition is a real prospect. Because here's the living evidence in this gentleman, in this great devotee. And pleasing is so apt a description to see the face of, to hear the voice of, to read the books of, to remember the instructions of. Srila Krishnapada is a pleasure. So, the Bhagavatam presents before us the persons upon whom the acharyas, the perfectly Krishna conscious people, the persons like Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, like my Guru Maharaj, Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami, like Srila Prabhupada, like Radhanath Swami. They have patterned their lives after the perfect pattern that is shown in the Bhagavatam. And we too are endeavoring in that way. So when I was chanting the auspicious vibrations to prepare me to speak usefully, and the last one, Bancha Kalpa Trivyascha, I was very grateful, because ordinarily I'm surrounded by people who are not endeavoring in this particular way, who haven't a clue about what it really means to be gentle and really means to be loving. They could easily understand these things if they had some introduction to the Bhagavat philosophy by a Bhagavat. So Srila Krishnapada has become that Bhagavat. He's become the person Bhagavat. And so when we think of him, we become happy, and we become emboldened, and we become sure that we can do this thing that's impossible to do, because he's done it. But ordinarily, I'm surrounded by people who don't have these ideas, and so there's a very unsavory fragrance to the world that they inhabit. And one of the things that I wanted to speak about is Srila Prabhupada's question towards the end of the purport. How can this be accomplished? With this idea in mind, the king or government head should rule the world. And this way everyone will be satisfied. What is this idea that the ruler or government should have in mind? That we have all come here for sense gratification, for enjoyment. Huh? That's what Prabhupada is saying. That we want to lord it over the material nature. And we have come to this material world for sense enjoyment. And therefore it's the duty of the government to provide sense enjoyment. But it's not just unqualified sense enjoyment. Sense enjoyment and elevate them to Krishna consciousness so that they can all ultimately return home back to Godhead. The significance here is that actually sense gratification is our nature. But we have to understand that in the right way. By gratifying Krishna's senses, we become very happy. Krishna is Ananda Maya Vyasat. He's very happy. He's supremely jubilant. At every moment, he's ever increasingly happy. He's never been as happy as he is just now. But next moment, he'll be happier than that. And that goes on eternally for Krishna. And his parts and parcels participate in that by pleasing him. We fall into the material world when we want to carry on that same formula, sans Krishna, without Krishna. And therefore it does not work. I remember examples that have been given. The finger is a beautiful thing. I was watching Mridanga player, maybe it was Gopal, I don't remember. Somebody's playing the mridanga. I was watching the finger, you know, and the finger was moving very expertly and it was making these rhythms you had to dance to. That finger is beautiful. What it was doing was so beautiful. The effect was so beautiful. Finger is beautiful. But why is the finger beautiful? The finger is beautiful because it's connected to the hand, connected to the wrist, the elbow, the arm, the torso, the whole body. It's beautiful because it has subordinated itself to its purpose, to serve the whole body. So if it was Gopal who was playing mridanga so skillfully, I don't know, but whoever it was, the brain was saying, make the devotees happy. Make the kirtan rock. And so it was great. Now, God forbid, but if we see a finger separated from the body lying in the corner, well, it could be lying on velvet. It could be, you know, in a case, but it'd be ghastly. It'd be frightening. It'd be horrible. We'd be alarmed. We'd feel fear go through us. This is ghastly. This is horrible. Why is it ghastly? Why is it horrible? Same finger. Because it's detached from the whole. The part separated from the whole loses its dignity as a beautiful, worshipable, wonderful thing, and it becomes a ghastly and frightening and disturbing thing. So the material consciousness, which is the consciousness of forgetfulness of Krishna or resentment of Krishna, makes our existence ghastly. And this is what I mean when I say, ordinarily, I don't look up and see tilak. And persons sitting on the floor, when in America they could easily be sitting on Hiranya Kashi. You know, some golden Hiranya and couch, some nice soft golden. We make so many arrangements for sense gratification in America, but we have chosen not to. So the question was, how can this be accomplished? How can it be accomplished that society is governed in such a way that persons have their senses gratified and are elevated to Krishna consciousness? So Prabhupada says, how can this be accomplished? And then he says, there are the examples in the Bhagavad of persons like Prithu Maharaj. And I'm making the connection that persons like Srila Krishnapada become the Bhagavad. So that it's not only theoretical and in the book, but it's in our face. It's in our life. The person Bhagavat is in our life. And a culture springs up around that person. This culture, this Gita Nagari exists because of Srila Prabhupada, because of Srila Krishnapada, because of Satsarup Maharaj, because of the personalities who have sold themselves out, 100%, that this place could exist. So this is the counterculture. This is what the hippies, my generation, was looking for in the 60s. Peace and love, man. Flower power, baby. We were looking for a revolution to topsy-turvy the napalm and the atom bomb and the racism and the subjugation of the poor by the rich, while the rich become more and more arrogant and more intoxicated and more suicidal and more perverted and unhappy, and the poor become more and more downtrodden. So the hippies were looking to topsy-turvy that. Flower power, man. Music, love, bells, dancing. But they didn't have Krishna. Without Krishna, it's just another experiment doomed to fail. It's another evidence of ghastliness. It's another finger truncated from the hand, from the body. Ghastly, frightening, disturbing. And the hippie movement was that. Really, it became very disgusting and very frightening. But this is the counterculture. This is one way we answer Prabhupada's question. How can this be accomplished? Elect in your heart to follow the Bhagavat. That's what the disciple does. The guru is the person Bhagavat. And you have elected this person as presiding over your life. It's not Bush is the president of your life. Bush is not the president of your life. No. Srila Krishnapad is the president of your life. Or Radhanath Maharaj is the president of your life. Or Tamal Krishna Goswami is the president of your life. And one day in our ISKCON, someone will say, Mother so-and-so is the president of my life. Because that's in our tradition. But the point is that person, be they female or male person, must be the person Bhagavat. Then the counterculture is successful. Because you have reconnected. You've become whole. You are united. You're in yoga. This is what we're talking about that creates the counterculture. So, that's one way to answer. How can this be accomplished? Follow the person Bhagavat. Hold your own election, your own presidential election. And locate the guru. And vote for the guru. How do we vote for the guru? By our behavior. By our surrender. By our selling ourselves out to that person. And then the person wins with a landslide. Landslide victory. And we can enter the counterculture as a genuine participant in the counterculture. And we are no longer unhappy because our senses are gratified. Prasadam is delicious. Kirtan is delicious. Beholding the deities is delicious. Beholding the joy on the faces of the devotees is delicious. It's sense gratification. We're just a bunch of sense gratifiers. We're gratifying our senses shamelessly. We're shameless sense gratifiers. And it's wonderful. It's approved. It's authorized. It's what Krishna desires. Because we're pleasing Krishna. Krishna wants kirtan. He wants that food should not involve violence and harm to other sentient living beings who are his own children. So we've elected to do that by following the person Bhagavat. That's one answer. But I want to also suggest that another answer, we all know it, we say, Sankirtan Jagya Ki Jai! What is that? That's a war cry, really. You know, the Krishna Sankirtanam is supposed to go out into the world and get rid of all the presidents and governors and rulers who don't follow Krishna. This is another way. How can this be accomplished? By transforming the world outside of this counterculture. We have to come to this counterculture We have to follow leaders other than George Bush and who is it, Tony Blair and all these other warmongers and persons who are deluded about their identity. And we follow the person Bhagavat. And that's the beginning. We have taken shelter. We can reconstitute our deranged senses, thinking that I am the enjoyer, and arrange our senses properly and understand I am part and parcel of the enjoyer, who is Krishna. And this part is meant to serve the whole, and when the whole is served, the part becomes happy. Presto, I understand. So we go from a state of derangement to a state of arrangement, and the arrangements are all to serve Krishna, and that's the beginning. But it's not enough. I've always worried. When Vakreshwara Pandit's not around, I worry that, God, some big guy could come in here and it'd be all over, it'd be finished. But when Vakreshwara's around, I think, no, that's okay. Some big guy can come in here and try that, but he'd be sorry he did. I'm talking about protection. The beautiful counterculture has to be protected. And there are many ways that it can be protected. One thing is by being really genuinely Krishna conscious. You know, when the Mughals came into India and they wanted to destroy the culture there and put their own culture in its place, many times, if the pujari was pure, was really following the regulative principles and genuinely endeavoring to serve Guru and Krishna, then the pujari would get in a dream the message from Krishna, get out of here. Take me and take yourself and take your family and get out, because right down the road is your murderer. Right down the road is the malignant person who would crash my Archavigraha image and who would sunder your head from your body. So one way of protection is to be really genuinely Krishna conscious, because Krishna promises yoga shema vahamyaham. I protect you. Another way is to make a society that invites persons who are capable of being like Arjuna, being like Bhimasen, whose senses are gratified in that atmosphere and connect and behave to protect the society. And the supreme way, perhaps, is to carry out the heartfelt, deepest desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. To carry the message of Godhead to others. There is no servant more dear, nor will there ever be a servant more dear to me, says Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, in summary, than the person who carries this message to my devotees. Who enlightens the devotees with Krishna conscious practice by example and by precept. That's how we transform the world. And that's the Sankirtan movement. So this interesting, Prabhupada says, achutatmaka, this word here, achutatmaka. We see it's made of achuta and atmaka. And Prabhupada gives us the meaning, being Krishna conscious. But we could say some other name for Krishna. Why achyuta here? What does achyuta mean? Infallible, does not fall down. And the point is being made here that when we become truly Krishna conscious, when we're actually Krishna conscious, when we've sold out to Krishna, we can't fall down anymore. We can't be vanquished anymore. We can't be disturbed or prevented in anything that we wish. Everything that we wish is what Krishna wishes. What Krishna wishes is not disturbed. What Krishna wishes is not obstructed. When our wishes are different than Krishna's wishes, maybe they'll be obstructed. Maybe they'll be prevented. But it's not possible if we're wishing what Krishna wishes. This is why the word achyutatmika is used. But Apritu Maharaj was infallible. He was infallible because he was pure in his devotion to Krishna. He had no desire but Krishna's desire. I was grieving when I was away from Gita Nagari. I was thinking that Srila Krishnapada is going to leave the world. And he has a disease that hurts. And I don't like to stub my toe or get a splinter or step on a tack. And that's no kind of comparison. The pain that bodily disease can bring on us. So I'm thinking, this person that I think is the most exalted person, the most beautiful, wonderful person, why is this happening to him? And he must be suffering and something has to... I got all worked up. I was miserable. I was on the phone a lot. Mother Indrani remembers. I was on the phone. How is Srila Krishnapada? Can I speak to Srila Krishnapada? I was just miserable. And I was miserable until April. Even speaking with him and even hearing devotees saying, he's so amazing. I didn't believe it. I thought he must be suffering so much. But I came and I saw him and he spoke to me in April. And I saw, he looks so happy. He looks so peaceful. He's speaking in the most inspiring way. He is Achyutatmaka. He hasn't fallen into disease and despair and distress. I have, because I have underestimated him. But now in his presence, he's blowing that all away. And I see, look at that. He's completely fine. He's happy. And he said so. He said to me and my wife, he said, my body is finished. And the tumors are all over. And all the interventions, all the medicine did no good. And I was thinking, and he's saying that. But he had that beautiful smile and that peaceful air. And then he said, but I have never been happier in my entire life. And we could see that it was true. This is Krishna consciousness. So we can judge whether we're Krishna conscious. If we are complaining about everything. I remember one time Srila Krishnapada came to Detroit. I was living there. And I went to the place that they gave him to stay in. And you walk into the house and some animal died in the wall. I don't know what animal, but it smelled bad. I mean, it smelled so bad. You maybe got a headache or wanted to faint or run out. But Srila Krishnapada never said anything about it. We tried to get him out of there and get him someplace else, and hospitality was not forthcoming somehow. And sorry for those who weren't hospitable and didn't make arrangements, but he was not disturbed. I should have known from that episode, which was years ago, that nothing would disturb him, but I didn't know. I need to be reminded all the time because I'm practicing devotional service. I'm just practicing devotional service. So, sense gratification, I'm thinking of some, I made some notes. I'll skip around a little bit. I want to say that I mentioned that I'm ordinarily not looking at a group of persons who are pure devotees. Today I'm looking at a group of pure devotees. That's Prabhupada's definition of who we are. Maybe green mangoes, but mangoes. So pure devotees. Maybe not mature, but pure devotees. Why is that I'm not living in the temple? It's because of a desire to have a wife. And somehow or other, I had to go out of the temple to have that. And my guru actually facilitated that. It's a funny story. He called me to meet with him one time. Tamal Krishna Goswami called me. I made sure my tilak looked good. I ran to see what my Guru Maharaj wanted. And I would always compliment my Guru Maharaj that he was a spy of the best quality. So he knew a lot of things about me that I didn't know that he knew, like that I stayed up late nights writing letters, or that I read books of poetry and things that brahmacharis don't do. He knew that. And he called me and he said, Ladini Shakti Das, I'm thinking that maybe you don't belong in the brahmachari ashram. Maybe you actually would be better suited as a householder. You tell me about when you were in household life, how much preaching you did, how many people you brought to Krishna consciousness and everything. And he was joking with me. He was making fun of me. He's saying, like, if that's it all true, I don't know. You probably have exaggerated your exploits and your accomplishments. It's probably not real. But you're not doing much preaching now, was implicit in what he was saying. But you are staying up late reading books that aren't Krishna conscious and writing letters. And we wonder what you're doing. Maybe you actually are not in the right ashram. Of course, you're kind of over the hill. My guru was, he didn't mince words, thank you. You know, you're over the hill. In the Vedic paradigm, a man of your age is not supposed to think of getting married. You're supposed to think of retiring from married life. You've already been married. You have two children. So Vedically, you're supposed to now become vanaprastha and then later become sannyasi. He said, but I've looked at this. I've seen so many people artificially try to be without a spouse when they really, really want to be with a spouse and need to be with a spouse. And it frustrates them. It makes them bitter and unhappy. In other words, they're not getting sense gratification that they need. Legitimate, religiously approved, authorized sense gratification. And he said it ruins their devotional life. And they become miserable people. And they don't succeed in Krishna consciousness because they're unhappy. So even though you're old, maybe you should get married because you don't seem to be so qualified for the ashram. He said, but then again, you are without any money. You have no money at all. So you're old and you have no money and you need a wife. He said, you know, my wife says I had $8. She's underlining the fact that I had no money. He said, but there is that girl you're preaching to. She doesn't care about money. So he kind of, he changed things for me. He made me feel it's not wrong for me to maybe pursue this. It's not letting him down. It's not disapproved. He authorized me. See, he was acting like Prithu Maharaj. He was seeing that the citizen, this person, was happy and able to continue to try to become elevated in Krishna consciousness to go back home. That's why I'm not seeing devotees all the time. I'm living in Kansas and I see karmis all the time. I see my wife who's a devotee. I see the gurus that are on our altar and I see the deities. I worship the Lord every day, all day. But the people that I see all the time, they eat meat. They drink alcohol. All their sexuality is illicit, even if they're married, practically. So, again, the Lord knew my need. One of the reasons that I'm not so Krishna conscious is because I'm not totally convinced about how bad the world is. And so the Lord has put me back in the world with a Krishna conscious wife, and I can see how bad the world really is. So, it's a blessing. It's a blessing for me to be apart from the devotees because I long for the devotees more. And I rack my brain and my wife racks her brain. How can we be back in the association of devotees and maintain ourselves? And it's not an easy fix. It's not such an easy fix. I think we all remember, I don't know all your stories, but coming to Krishna was probably pretty disruptive, wasn't it? And you paid a big price, didn't you? And the whole world was topsy-turvied for a bit, and everything was upheaval. Fortunately, you got the ecstasy of transcendental sense gratification, but would you really like to throw your life topsy-turvy again? And as our bodies get older, it becomes more and more difficult. But the work I'm doing, I see people die every day. That's my work. I work with the actively dying. And when I see people who are not God-conscious die, sometimes they are passing stool and urine, as it's always said. The classic of they're so terrified, they're passing stool and urine. And there's nothing I can do to alleviate their distress because they didn't practice. The field is not ripe. You can throw the good seed, but if the soil is totally acidic, it just burns up the seed. Now, I carry the 1008 Tirtha Jals in my pocket always at my job. So I put it on people. And they're in, as long as I can. Sometimes I actually can't. The whole family's around. You know, I pull out of my pocket. They've, you know, end of job. So I have to use my discretion, but 9 times out of 10, the Ganga Jal goes on the people. I talk to them about the Lord. I substitute Christ for Krishna because Prabhupada authorized that. He said, we don't want to make the Christians give up their religion. We want to make them follow their religion. Because their religion is sufficient to deliver them from birth, death, old age, and disease if they would follow it. But they don't follow. So I try to preach to them and everything. But I really see how much superior this arrangement is, where you Krishnaize your consciousness so much, so thoroughly, that death will not be a big problem for you. And then if we become advanced, if we become, and don't think that you can't become like Bhakti Tirtha Swami. He was born in Cleveland. He was not born in a Brahmin family in Vrindavan. He was born in Cleveland. And he was educated in Cleveland. And he ate meat like all of us did. And he has become the person Bhagavat. So we can become like that. And if we become like that, death is, there is no death. There's no death. There is bhajan on the Lord. There's ecstasy. There's preaching at every moment. There's encounters with divine persons at every moment. So this is how we accomplish this. By retiring to the counterculture, by electing as the president of our life, not George Bush or Tony Blair or some mundane warmonger or fool, but the person Bhagavat, like Srila Krishnapada or Srila Prabhupada or Tamal Krishna Gosar, we have Guru. And then we preach the message of Guru and we act the way Guru said to do. So there's so much in this verse, in this text. Let me look at my notes because I'm thinking of so many things, but this pleasing the desires, Let me say one or two other things about the purport. And Prabhupada has labored and gave his whole life to give us these purports, and they're so significant. I don't want to skip over points. We've looked at the point about achyuta atmaka, that the person who becomes pure in their devotion to Krishna cannot fall down. And they cannot fall down because they are always remembering Krishna's instructions and trying to exemplify them. And also, if we are insufficient, if we aren't able, Krishna will step in and he will perform that needed thing. That's the other meaning of achyutatmaka. Krishna will actually stand in. If you can't do it, but you are genuinely Krishna conscious, Krishna promises, I will carry what you lack. I will preserve what you have. I will do it personally. That's the other point of achyutatmaka. Now then Prabhupada goes on to say that Prithu Maharaj understood what the creation's purpose was, to provide sense gratification that was licit and a means to become Krishna conscious. But the leaders of our society, the perverse Brahmins, which is to say the scientists, the atheistic scientists, they don't know this. And here Prabhupada is complaining that their epistemology is wrong. They are following the inductive path. They are trying to use their senses to understand reality. And their senses can't comprehend the deity. They can't comprehend transcendence. And so they suppose that there is no transcendence. And they make up a whole pretend system because they only deal with the material. And because they can accomplish so many great things in the material, like making an atom bomb, that's great, isn't it? Burn people's cities down, and that's great. Well, they can make things like cars that crash every year, killing more people than many wars did. Yeah, that's also not great, but you get my point. They make all these things that they think are great, that aren't great because they've only focused on the material, and they've left aside the spiritual. So Prabhupada is saying, this epistemology is wrong. You can't know everything by investigation. Some things you can only know by hearing from the authority. How can you know who your father is? There is only one way to know. You have to ask your mother. If your mother doesn't know, nobody knows. Krishna knows. So the Vedas are the mother, and they tell us who our father is. Our father is Krishna. This is the epistemology that delivers us from the culture of the demons and allows us to enter the counterculture. Now, I also wanted to talk about the counterculture on a higher level, because this counterculture here is just a replica of the spiritual world. This is a replica of the spiritual world. And I was thinking, because the first word here is Gopitaya, Gopi. I don't know Sanskrit, but I see the word Gopi there, and it makes me think, what would Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur say? He would talk about Braj. And Purusha Shukta yesterday was telling me that after Srila Krishnapada announced his Nirjan Vajan, he noticed that all the talks had this Braj Katha. And so we connected the dots, that Srila Krishnapada, being the person Bhagavat, made an announcement in an atmosphere that could hear him and that could reflect his mood. And so Krishna Katha and Braj Katha came up spontaneously. And I'd like to try to continue that. And it's legitimate, because this text is telling us that sense gratification is all right. It just has to be Krishna conscious sense gratification. And so the Acharyas have told us everyone in Braj is enjoying, and Krishna is satisfying all their needs. So I was thinking of a pastime where one of Jashoda's neighbors, a gopi, gopi, in the spiritual atmosphere of Vrindavan, Krishna is always coming to her house. Do you know why? Do you know why he's coming to her house? Little boy Krishna, huh? Steal butter and yogurt. And she knows that he's doing this. And she is trying to catch him doing this, but she can never catch him because he's a rascal, because he's Krishna, because he's very slippery. But she figures, I'm going to catch him and I'm going to stop this. But before she catches him, she goes to Yashoda. She says, your son is always coming to my place and he's stealing the butter and he's taking the yogurt. And Yashoda says, come on. My Krishna doesn't have to steal butter. Look how much butter we have in our place. We have so much. Why would he go to your place to steal butter? That's silly. There must be some other boy who's coming and stealing. What are you complaining about? Krishna would never do that. Yes, Yashoda, it's your boy. It's your boy. It's your Krishna. I know. Oh. So in that way, it went back and forth. So the gopi, she thought, oh, Yashoda is now saying that I'm a fool. I don't even know that her son is coming to my place. I know it's her son. I'll show Yashoda and I'll show that Krishna. So she makes a little hole in the wall where her storeroom is. And from the other side of the wall, she can peep in and she can see around where the butter is. She's just waiting. She's got it arranged so that when Krishna is occupied in stealing the butter, she can grab him and get him. And that's what she does. Krishna is so busy stealing the butter and thinking of his friends, the monkeys and the others that he'd feed the butter to. He doesn't see her. She creeps up, grabs him. Okay, you rascal, I've got you. I've got you now. And I'm taking you to Yashoda. Krishna says, no, don't take me to Yashoda. And the crocodile tears come. No, don't take me to... And she's just pulling him along behind her. And she says, I'm going to bring you to... No, don't bring me. I'll never do it again. Just please let me go. She says, no, I'm going to show Yashoda. She told me that there was some other boy. I will show her that it's you. Please don't do this. Please, if you do this, you'll be sorry. And she's not listening. She's just thinking about, I'm going to show Yashoda. I've finally busted Krishna. He says, "You will not. You'll be sorry. You should let me go." She's really so keen, and she's right there. And she says, "Yashoda, I told you Krishna was stealing butter. You see?" And Yashoda's laughing. She wonders why. And she pulls Krishna around, and she's holding her son in her hand. She's blushing. You can imagine she blushes like this beautiful skirt for Tulsi. She's so embarrassed. "I told you my son wouldn't steal. He has so much butter here. It's your own son. What are you, going blind?" So in this way, the gopi was going back with her son in her hand. And then you get a little distance away, and it's Krishna again. And she's, "Oh, you..." She's looking at Krishna. He says, "Next time, I'll become your husband." But just see, that lady, she's not Krishna's mother, but Yashoda, by asking the question, is flattering her very much, or confirming something that nourishes her sentiment as a devotee. Even though Nanda's goshal is so abundant and rich, and even though their godown is filled with so much butter and yogurt, Krishna likes to come to my house to steal butter. How important I am. Krishna comes to my place to steal my butter. And Krishna became my son. That can't be lost on this mother. Krishna was my son. And that wasn't the only time that Krishna became the son of the Gopikas of Vrindavan. We know in the Brahma Vimohan Lila that Krishna did that. When Brahma stole all the cowherd boys and the calves, then Krishna became all the calves and the cowherd boys. And there was a year that went by before the boys were released, before that story was told to the Brijbasis. What happened in that year? Every Gopika in Braj was nursing Krishna at her breast. That Krishna looked like her son, but it was Krishna. And she was thinking, "I've never loved my son so much. I love my son, but I love my son just like I love Krishna." Huh? This is the meaning here of sense gratification and the fulfillment of the desires. Every calf, every gopika, every person is completely satisfied. This explanation has helped me in my work with the hospice. When I'm working with people, they have this paltry, shriveled theology. I hope I'm speaking in an interesting way. I want to say something. This counterculture that we live in, that we're happy in and that we're safe in, we should become strong enough to go outside of it as Sankirtan warriors or as undercover agents and change the outer world. I like to think that's what my guru is doing through me when I'm at the hospice. I work with these people, they have a theology that tells them they have one life, one chance for heaven, and a lot of chance to slip and not make it and go to hell forever. And I work with actively dying people who think that's their destination. And so I'm able to intervene with our theology. Sometimes it's a religious person who's dying, who thinks, "Oh, I'm going to die and I'm going to go to heaven, but my family hasn't accepted Christ." Actually, the family just is appalled by the fundamentalism and the rigidity and the narrow-minded, intolerant, hateful Christianity that this person thinks is bringing them to heaven. So the person's on their deathbed in total anxiety thinking, "I'm a good Christian and I'm going to heaven, but my family's not, because they haven't said, I accept Lord Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior." And so they're not going to go to heaven. And I'm able to tell them what Nisringadev told Prahlad. "But mother, you're such a lover of Christ. Christ has become obliged by your love. And he doesn't want you to go to heaven and still have a kind of hellish flavor to your experience because you're thinking your son and daughter are in hell roasting forever. The Lord doesn't want you to feel that way, and you've pleased the Lord. You've obliged the Lord. And consequently, your devotion to the Lord will suffice to give them some opportunity to get the blessing that you feel they haven't got. And people like that. Of course they like that. That's Nisringadeva's teaching. It's the higher truth that they've never heard. Or sometimes it's the other way around. The person feels that they're unqualified, and I remind them that Christ has made a sacrifice for you. So one of the things that I try to do when I'm working with people is tell them truth, not lies, but truth that will lift them up. So I tell them things like, you know, you're dying, and they're so attached to the world, they don't want to die. They want to say they can't lift their hand up, they can't eat, they can't drink, they can't dance, they can't walk, they can't do anything. They're in a miserable condition, they're confined to a room, but they don't want to die. It's just absurd, isn't it? But why not? Because they don't want to miss the people that they love. So I tell them, who has died? Your mother? You'll see your mother. Your father? You'll see your father. Who has died? You'll see your son that was killed on the motorcycle. You'll see him. And they become a little happy. I think, am I lying to them? No. How is it that they will see their mother or see their father? We know that the mother and father may have died 20 years ago and reincarnated now. They're somewhere else. There's some other identity. Who knows what they are? Maybe they didn't even come back to the human form. How am I going to tell them they're going to see them? The Brahma Vimohan Lila tells us the answer to this. In the Upanishads, the Chandoga Upanishad, it says that inside the heart there is a house. And inside the house there's a lotus. And inside the lotus is Brahman. And one who enters the house and enters the lotus and enters into Brahman consciousness and becomes Brahman conscious, that person can fulfill all their desires. If their mother has died and they wish to be in the company of their mother, then they can go to the world of the mothers and be with their mother and be happy in the company of their mother. And then it goes on, the father and the brother and the sister and the friend and the wife and the husband. There's a whole litany. And I used to read this before I came to Krishna consciousness. And I said, wow, I want to become Brahman conscious. Anything you desire, you can go to the world where it is and get it. And then years later, I read a Vaishnav commentary on this. And it said, wait a minute. If mother has died 20 years ago, it's likely that if she wasn't a devotee, she's reincarnated and taken some other form. How are you going to go visit her? And then the Vaishnav answer is, if you have become Krishna conscious and you still have desires that are obstacles to your entry into Krishna's presence, Krishna will become the fulfillment of your desire. He carries what you lack. You lack the association of your mother who's gone. Krishna will become your mother or become your father or become whatever it is that you desire. So getting back to the persons in the hospice that I work with, Krishna's pure devotees are also mystics. We hear about Prithu pursuing the earth. He had mystic power. He could go to realms that we can't see. He could change his shape. Bhumi could change her shape. He could change his shape. So if a person is even a devotee of Christ and they have some piety and they go to a heavenly planet before they take birth again to resume their process of purification, it's not a lie to say you'll go to heaven. We know they're not going back home, back to Godhead, but they'll go to heaven. And to say you'll meet your mother, why wouldn't a pure devotee who's working on behalf of Krishna change shape and appear to them in a way that they recognize to comfort them? What I'm getting at here is that we want to try to learn to speak a language that can attract people to the counterculture that we have become members of. And if we study the teachings of the person Bhagavat and the book Bhagavat, we have that language. And if we take it outside of the protection of our community and we remain protected by being pure in our devotional practice, we'll be safe and we can go forward and we can transform the society and we can give Krishna to people as much as they're ready for it. So at the hospice, I do sometimes sing the Gurvashtakam prayers for dying people. I sometimes do give them the holy name of Krishna. It's not often. Most people are not qualified. But they're liking me, and I'm a worthless person, but I am attached to Tamal Krishna Goswami. He is not a worthless person. So they're liking a devotee indirectly through liking me. So this is the other answer to the question. We have to become really qualified devotees, and we have to expand the counterculture so that everyone, instead of electing Tony Blair, he was just re-elected, or George Bush, or some other demonic person disguised as a philanthropist. We elect the guru, the person Bhagavat, to be our leader, and we teach others to do the same, and we transform the world. This is pleasing to Krishna. This is the message of the Bhagavat. And this is what Prithu Maharaj did. Even in this fallen age, if the rulers, governors, and presidents take advantage of Prithu Maharaj's example, there will certainly be a reign of peace and prosperity throughout the world. That's our responsibility. I'll finish by saying, I was taking counsel of a psychic person, a wise person that I know, who can, really gifted person. And I was describing that Srila Krishnapada is leaving the world and how upset I am at the time. This was some time ago. And the person said, well, one thing is, now you have to come up to that level. And I thought, that's not possible. You don't know Srila Krishnapada, and you don't know me. The gulf is so enormous, it's not possible. But more and more that has sunk in. When the great personalities leave, we have to step up. We may step up and not still be very far from where they are, but we'll be further up and more Krishna conscious and more useful than we are now. So that's part of what these pastimes of the disappearance are about. What are we waiting for? To transform ourselves so that we can transform the world. If we always think, my father is here, he'll do everything. And then what do we do when father goes away? We have to do everything. So we have to become pure. Then we can make the counterculture everywhere.
Gopitaya jagatshreshte kale sve sve chutatmakaha manovag vrittibhi samyar gunai samranjayan prajaha.
Since Maharaj Prithu was a perfect devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he wanted to protect the Lord's creation by pleasing the various citizens according to their various desires. Therefore, Prithu Maharaj used to please them in all respects by his words, mentality, works, and gentle behavior. Are there any comments or questions?
Prabhu is saying
that the emphasis in this verse and in the purport about the necessity of providing sense gratificatory processes for the praja, for the people, is actually the duty of the Krishna conscious leader and the duty of the Krishna conscious government. And yet, within ISKCON, those of us who enter the counterculture very often encounter an environment that seems hostile to any discussion even of satisfying your desires and gratifying your senses. Well, now, that's the question. So is there some way that we can incorporate this understanding that it's legitimate to gratify your senses and it's even necessary so that you can be progressive into our counterculture? That's the question? Okay. So, well, I repeat to begin with one thing I said in talking about my Guru Maharaj. I don't like to talk about my marriage per se, but except it's important in this case because I felt loneliness and I felt unhappy. I needed to have a spouse and be in that ashram. And my Guru saw that I had that need. And he encouraged me and he gave me his blessings. And he did it in a way that made me feel that I'm not letting my guru down. He didn't make me feel like you're a failure, you should have been a brahmachari. But you, he saw my situation, and he spoke in a way that made me feel very good about pursuing that situation. So he emphasized what the Bhagavatam emphasized, because he knew it very well. And I think that's really the answer to your question, is that we have to understand our philosophy properly. Our philosophy is not one of mortification. It's not one of austerities that pinch and hurt. That's for the impersonalists. That's for, Maharaj the other day was saying, you know, the bitter detachment, you know. That bitter detachment is because of a misunderstanding in the first place. If we have the right understanding, we don't want to detach from eating food. We want to detach from eating food that's forbidden, food that can't be offered to Krishna. We want to detach from eating food that hasn't first been offered to Krishna. But once it's offered to Krishna, we want to delight in honoring his remnants. So that's our philosophy, is that we sing, we dance, we take prasadam, we have family life. Just in the previous couple of verses, Prithu Maharaj's family life was glorified. That means sex life is being glorified, and the sex life is being glorified as non-different than Krishna. So our philosophy is not one of being inimical to pleasure, but it's identifying what really constitutes pleasure. What constitutes pleasure is not sexual intercourse, but rather Krishna conscious, anything that we do constitutes pleasure. So begetting a child in Krishna consciousness is certainly a pleasure. Eating in Krishna consciousness is certainly a pleasure. Maybe I'm not answering your question because you're talking about the fact that we all have heard this, but somehow or other we come here and we get this kind of Nazi mood, you know. Oh, you want to be happy? Oh. Well, that's a misapplication of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada was a very happy person. And he made his devotees happy. And he said kind things to them when they came brokenheartedly to him. And we have to exemplify that. That's part of what made Srila Krishnapada's preaching so wonderful in the world, is that he was very kind in that way. And he was very encouraging to devotees. It's a mistake when we think we're hostile to sense gratification. There is no sense gratification in illicit sex. It just leads to heartbreak, it leads to arguments, it leads to disease, it leads to unwanted children, it complicates everything, it brings in nastiness and disaster. That's not pleasure. So we're just calling a spade and a flower, and life, life, and death, death. We're just identifying properly where the channels for pleasure are. Sex is not forbidden. Illicit sex is forbidden because illicit sex doesn't produce pleasure. But licit sex does. Overeating or eating foods that are not offered to Krishna, that doesn't give us pleasure. It gives us pain and disease. And that's what is proper understanding of Krishna consciousness. Does that speak to your question? I see two hands. One, two. Prabhu is asking how we can infiltrate the dominant culture, which is demonic, with Krishna consciousness and not be capsized. Well, we have to become a chudatmaka. We have to be very Krishna conscious. And that means that what we give them, like we heard Srila Krishnapada say the other day, he did unconventional things. He sometimes dressed in unconventional ways for a sannyasi. And he wrote books about New Age and things like that, that are, you know, some people within the movement thought, that's not right. Sannyasi should not dress that way. Sannyasi should not speak that way. But he made the very strong point, I never deviated from the Siddhanta. I gave people Krishna. I gave them Krishna in a way that they could take Krishna. So that's the first thing. We must be achyutatmaka. Also, we don't really have to study hip-hop phenomena. Prabhu is mentioning that, you know, the hippies are gone. Hippie came and went. Well, hip-hop will also come and go, but he's saying now is the hip-hop culture. So how do we infiltrate the hip-hop culture? And my answer is, in part, in addition to becoming Krishna conscious, we should be confident that we don't have to study hip-hop culture or emulate hip-hop culture to infiltrate. But we have to genuinely like the people who are in the culture. And if we genuinely like the people who are in the culture, they will like us. So rather than try to emulate their style, we should learn to love them. That may require studying them, not so much their culture, but what make them adopt this culture, you know. And love them by giving them prasadam, by giving them books. I mean, I don't think that we need to change our process of sankirtan because the phenomenon of who we're giving it to, they have changed. What we still have to do is give them Krishna. But there's nothing wrong with being innovative. You just have to be fully Krishna conscious. Then you innovate. That's what Krishna, Srila Krishnapada did. He was fully Krishna conscious and he innovated. So I think the answer to your question is be fully Krishna conscious. Really, really, really sincerely chant your rounds and follow the principles and beg at every moment for your guru's protection and mercy and go out in that way and continue to associate with devotees. Then you'll be successful. And if we stay inside and never do that, we'll be only a minor success. It's glorious to stay in the protection of the counterculture that's been created for us and never go out. This is Radha Damodar here. All over the country, they were just stealing people from Maya's grip. And so we want to do that. That the only way to be safe is to be fully Krishna conscious. And then you can't fall down. You become achyutatmaka. Prabhuji. culture.